we can spend way more time figuring out what the purpose is, and that the tasks after that will become much more clear and defined.
I'd like to welcome Thane Marcus Ringler to the Productivityist Podcast. Thane, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me on, Mike. It's a pleasure to be chatting with you today and excited for the conversation to come.
So you're the author of the book Catalysts for Hope, Unlocking Energy, Optimism, and Your Full Potential. And what I liked when I was going through this book, first off, it's a nice read. It seems like a short read, right? Like, but as I went through it, like, this is a longer book than I thought. And it kind of felt like, when I've just started meditating as we're recording this, I've built a meditation habit. Actually, for an entire month, I meditated and it was fantastic. But you know, when you meditate for long enough and all of a sudden 20 minutes doesn't feel like 20 minutes anymore. And you're like, that's what this book felt like to me. As I went through it, I'm like, I'm just going through it bit by bit by bit. And I get to the end and I'm like, this is longer than I thought. Did the process of writing it feel that way for you? Because it felt like as I was reading it, there was a almost like a state of flow and consciousness throughout the book as you wrote it. Like it almost felt like you wrote it in almost one sitting to a degree. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that feedback. I agree. I think that when it has a nice cadence or rhythm to it, it sets you in a flow state in a sense. So writing it was enjoyable in the sense that it was a process of discovery for myself as well. It's kind of like sitting and reflecting, and you discover things as you sit and reflect or meditate. And through that, then the words kind of come a little bit more naturally. So I would agree that I think writing it was more meditative than it was effortful. And I think that it's cool to see that is what was felt or received by you in reading it. And that's good affirmation for me because, you know, without feedback, it's hard to really know if what we produced or did was delivering the desired goal.
Well, and what was interesting is I read the book kind of in tandem with reading Seth Godin's book, The Practice, and he was on an earlier episode of the podcast. We'll link to that in the show notes. And both felt that way. So, I mean, Seth's writing is generally, you know, like it feels that way anyways, you know, to a degree. Like I don't know if you ever read Seth Godin's work before, but it was almost like I was getting that from both sides. So both books kind of felt to your point of like not effortful reading them. It was very effortless in a lot of ways. Now, one of the things that I really appreciated was the catalyst, and I'm a big fan of alliteration. So I'm just going to let you explain initially what the four catalysts are that I see here, like that I'm looking at, and then what, maybe we'll get into each one of them. Does that sound like a good plan?
That sounds great.
All right, yeah. So go ahead.
The catalysts are simple, basically perspective shifts that can help us reframe where we're at or what we're doing in life to produce hope, which is really the fuel that keeps driving us forward, even in the darkest of times. And the four catalysts are the alliteration, as you mentioned, of the four P's is kind of a helpful way to remember. And the first is in process. So the fact that we're in process is a hopeful thing because we're not finished yet. We haven't reached the finish line yet. The second is progress. And that's the idea that progress happens by baby steps, not by giant leaps. And that's a really hopeful thing because we don't have to try and make this massive jump to make progress. We just have to make a baby step, and that's attainable every day. The third catalyst is possibility. And this idea that if we stop thinking more in the sense of probability and start leaning more into the possibility, it provides more hope for what can come. A lot of times we get caught up in this idea of probability of what's the chances or likelihood of this happening versus the possibility of it happening. And the simple shift there allows a lot of hope to enter the picture. And finally, purpose is obviously one that's talked about a lot, but that is one of the greatest hope producers in all of the world. And living attached and aligned to a purpose that's greater than yourself will inevitably provide hope to keep moving forward despite the odds, despite what's going on in our own personal lives, just because it's for a greater meaning or purpose beyond ourselves.
So let's talk about the process piece first, because and I had Austin Kleon on the show before. Again, linking back to that in the show notes, you're getting linked to all the big names. but he talks about the idea of process, not product, right? Or process, mm-hmm. if you're Canadian like me. What you talk about the let's get into process, because I think a lot of people they skip that step. They're so focused on the outcome, right? They're so focused on, and as you go through this, even like we don't see at the end, like, you know, product, right? Like at the end of these P's, we're not like, okay, and here's the product, right? Like it, to me, it almost seems like the product is, I wouldn't say incidental, but it's just, it's affirmed. It's, you know, okay, well, this is what will, if you do all these things, the product is there. We're not going to talk about the product per se, but we're going to intertwine it between, right? Like what, you know, how you can have that hope that you need to move forward. So what, when people are thinking about putting things in process, right? And that's, what's one of the ways that people can kind of get that going so that they can start to move into the other areas as well? So let's get into that a little bit, okay?
Yeah, you know, I think it's really powerful, because this is, I think our natural instinct is always to discover or pinpoint a destination and try to just reach that. And that puts all the emphasis on a certain end point. And really, there is no final endpoint in whatever journey we're on or whatever goal we have. Once we accomplish, I think we all can realize and admit that once we accomplish that goal, it's not as fulfilling as we expected it to be. Or if it is, it lasts a lot shorter than we thought it would. And that's an experience that's common throughout all of humanity. I think every person listening to this, just as much as you and I, can relate to that experience. And so the process is always where the beauty comes, because that's where the growth lies. And the fact that we are in process versus arriving at a destination, there's so much more hope in being in the process, because as I mentioned in the book, the quote that really I think is powerful in this is, forward progress is not a finished process. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times, if you think about, like, Olympic athletes are a great example, right? They spend their whole life, a lot of times, for this prize possession of achieving success at the Olympic stage and getting that Olympic gold medal. But they face one of the hardest challenges in post-Olympics. What do they do with themselves and their identity and their lives once they've accomplished that penultimate goal? Now what, right? And that fact that they've arrived at this destination, and then what, right? There is not anything beyond that of what they had imagined before, because they put so much emphasis on that destination that they forgot about the process that's never ending, that life goes on and there's more to do and there's more to come. And it takes a lot of reframing and aligning identity with who we are, not what we do. And so this idea of focusing on the process to unlock hope, it revolves around our identity and how our identity is not in what we do. It's not a job title. It's not the work we do in the world. It's who we are as a human being. And that allows us to have more flexibility and freedom in what we do and not having our identity attached to it, which can provide, again, more hope. It can be a catalyst for that by allowing that to shift and change as we grow through life.
Now let's get into the progress piece. And one of the things that you talk about in the book is the idea of people don't realize that the steps are smaller than they think. And I talk about this a lot when people are, for example, they'll write down a task and I'm like, is that really a task or is that a project? Like, let's think about this. Is this, have you broken that this task, which is really a project, down into its smallest particles? So how can we affect progress in a way that is going to help people get the most out of it so that they don't end up looking backwards going, oops, I missed that. Or, oh, I didn't do that as well as I could have because I fudged that step, or I didn't even realize that there was a step there.
Yeah. You know, I think this is a part of the Western ideology of pulling yourself by your own bootstraps and the overnight success. And these are two myths that are very prevalent in our culture. And the hard part about that is we see these images of success and they seem instant, overnight, or like viral fame in that sense. Mm-hmm. And none of that will produce what we think it does. We think that we want to be the next Justin Bieber, right? Who becomes this childhood star, but we don't think about all the negative side effects of that and how his childhood was robbed from him and how he has now everyone in his entire life, whether he wants it or not. A lot of these negative side effects that of kind of this overnight myth that in reality, if we're honest with ourselves, we don't want that anyways.
Right.
We really don't. And you know, that is the one in a million case. And that's not the success story that we really want because of what comes with it. And so when you look at the way we make progress, it is completely in baby steps. I like this idea of, you know, this whole idea of jumping to the 10th step. If we think about, you know, we want to be at the 10th step, we want to arrive, right? And that's kind of back to that destination. They're tied together in that sense to where if we jump to the 10th step, we're probably not going to be ready for the 10th step because we didn't take the 9 steps to get there beforehand. Mm-hmm. And by taking those 9 steps, we're actually gaining muscle. We're gaining strength, we're gaining experience and valuable insight and knowledge and growth that's going to help us use that 10th step well, versus if we skip all those 9 steps to get there, we're not going to be prepared for it anyways. And it's usually going to result in negative results for us personally. And so I think this idea of reframing our perspective, that it's all about the baby steps to get there, because by taking those 9 steps to get to the 10th step, we're going to be more prepared for that 10th step. And so that helps us then go back to that first one of process. It helps us embrace the process more, because by embracing the process of, hey, let's just take a baby step today, that helps us see that it's attainable every single day. We can always take a step every single day. It gives us encouragement, because then our focus and our priority is on the things that's going to prepare us for what's been prepared for us down the road in that 10th step. And by doing so, we're gonna provide more value for other people and more benefit for ourselves, because we're not gonna set ourselves up for an epic demise.
Possibilities. That's the next thing I want to get into. You mentioned Amos Tversky in this book, and you know, he's one of the he worked with Daniel Kahneman on so many things, right? You define possibility as the stimulant that helps us lean into our full potential and embrace our calling in this beautiful adventure called life, which I think is, it makes you want to do that. You know what I mean? Like, it makes you want to. And so you say it's both the idea of both leaning in into it and living in the possibility. Can we, let's expand upon that, because I think that once you've gone through those first two catalysts, right? And again, I'll follow that up with another question about all of these catalysts, but why do you feel that way about possibility? Like, why did you define it as such? And then how can you, through the work in this book, help others see it in the same light?
Yeah. You know, this is a tough one, because I think a lot of times anybody who is trying to live a hope-filled life, because it's not as common, because it's not necessarily as part of the majority, it can often be seen as fanciful or fantasaical, or just it's not realistic, right? We think, well, that's not super realistic. And the problem is this rationalized realism keeps us from the unrealistic nature of life. I mean, life itself is very unrealistic. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, there's so many things in our world that we have rationalized to make seem realistic that aren't realistic. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the fact of a baby being born is not realistic. Like, if you think about that whole process, it's insane, right? Or I love, there's a video on YouTube about it. I think The Lie of Realism is what it's called. And he talks about a dragonfly, like with these quad propeller wings that are just insane when you slow down and examine it. And like, is this real life? I mean, it's very unrealistic. So the first premise is that this lie of realism, that realism is what's what should be pursued by us, because it's more what is the reality of life. But in reality, there's way more than, and if you look at like something like physics, right? I mean, there's way more that we don't know, and that's a good thing, because it helps us see that there's way more that's possible than we often expect. And so leaning into and living in is the kind of the posture of it. And I think for an example of what this looks like, you know, I played golf professionally for about 4 years. And in that, when you look at the game of golf is taking a little white ball from one point and then trying to hit it to another point that's about 400 yards away, give or take, depending on the hole, mm-hmm. and getting into a small cup in the ground, a hole in the ground. I mean, talk about an unrealistic endeavor. Yet, you have to believe in the possibility of it in order to pull it off.
Right.
And so if I approach a shot and say, you know what, the chances of this ball getting close to that pin with this shot is really small. And, you know, I don't think it's going to probably happen. I'm going to hit a horrible shot.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I have to believe that it's possible and imagine and almost, you know, envision it happening before it does in order to pull it off. And it works both ways. And so we can create negative results in our life by imagining them just as much as we can positive results. And so if I step up to a tee shot, and I actually experimented with this when I was playing professionally, because I was really working on the mental side of the sport. And if I went into a tee shot and there was, you know, water on the right side and the wind was blowing to the right, and I'm thinking, okay, don't hit it in the water. Don't hit it in the water. I can almost guarantee you the ball is going to end up there.
Yep.
Because negative affirmations work just as much as positive do. They lead to the result. And so we have to imagine and see and visualize this possibility in order to reach into it. And I think the other example that ties into this is, you know, something like the Navy SEALs and Hell Week when training for it. A lot of times there's this thing called a Kokoro, which is like a civilian version of it that they put on. And I've kind of wanted to do it, but the whole point of it is we can't force ourselves to reach into that 10% of our maximum capacity. We need other people to pull us out of that, mm-hmm. to push us into that 10%. Because, you know, when we're in a workout by ourselves, we're going to push ourselves probably to that 80% threshold. But to push ourselves to that 90, 95, or 100% of what we actually are capable of, usually that happens through people yelling at you, screaming at you, and almost, in a sense, torturing you to get there.
Well, yeah, that's why you have personal trainers, right? Like on your own, it's going to be hard. And I mean, the one step removed from that would be like having watching a video where the trainer's doing it. So there's degrees, right? Like if they're in your yes. face, it's going to be even more prevalent than it, let's say, if you're watching it on a TV screen or something. But that's why that works.
Totally. Totally. And so all that's saying is that we have another threshold of possibility, right? It's not probable. It's not necessarily like based on probabilities, I think I can do this. It's saying, I'm not sure I can do this, but I believe it might be possible. And so I'm going to lean into, and it's kind of like an active reliance upon what we don't know, right? It's an active discomfort in saying that this is really hard and I'm not sure what the result will be, but I think it's possible. So I'm going to keep leaning in. So it's this level of faith or belief in what's to come or what can come from that effort without fully knowing.
Okay, let's take a break from the conversation now to talk about this episode's sponsors. I am a big fan of this sponsor, and they've been sponsoring me for a while on this podcast. And I've been using this product for a while, even before this podcast, and it's Text Expander. You can get it right every time with Text Expander. Text Expander makes it easy to give your team the right words for every situation. Whether you need to keep legal happy or delight customers with effective answers, you can rest easy knowing your team has it covered with Text Expander. Now, I've just brought somebody on recently to join my team, and Vanessa is getting well-versed in a lot of the tools that we use, and Text Expander is definitely one of those, because we want some consistent messaging across the board, and it makes it just so easy for us to have that happen because of Text Expander. And the latest version of Text Expander even has new and improved statistics reporting for organizations, including the ability to build reports with customizable date ranges for enterprise and individuals, so you can track how much time your team saves. And that's a big deal when you're bringing people on board, either now like I have, or you've had them on board for a while and you want to just see how much time you're saving. Text Expander is a huge time saver. With Text Expander, you can keep your team consistent, accurate, and current. You can share your text and images with the whole staff to keep them on track. Everyone will share the same message and give the same answers to all customer questions. That's huge. You'll work faster and smarter. And you can use Text Expander's powerful shortcuts and abbreviations to streamline and speed up everything you type and everything that your teammate Vanessa types. You can create powerful snippets to save you time so that all you type is a short abbreviation and Text Expander does the rest of the typing for you. And you can share your snippets of messaging, signatures, and descriptions with everyone who works on projects with you. Text Expander is available for Mac, Windows, Chrome, iPhone, and iPad. So pretty much anything you're using, you can use Text Expander. And I encourage you to use it. Go visit textexpander.com/podcast and get 20% off your first year. I've used Text Expander year in and year out, and it is an indispensable tool in my productivity toolkit. So again, go to textexpander.com/podcast and get 20% off your first year today. The busy holiday season is done, and now we're easing back into the work world as we know it. Maybe we're not easing into it. Maybe we're dealing with things like stress and issues with sleep because you're all over the place with it, and you need to recover. So whether you're, you know, recovering or dealing with the holiday kind of recuperation period, or you're just getting back to work, or you're doing what I do and trying to get back into shape, all of these things, sleep, stress, recovery, all that, they shape how we perform. And I know I've really wanted to make sure that I hit the ground running when 2021 started. And I have to say that once I added Nucom to my daily routine, it's helped me in a big way. It's made a noticeable difference. It's really important to your health and happiness to be able to manage stress and not be managed by it. Same goes for time, right? Well, Nucom gives you the power and control to relax and recharge anywhere and anytime. You can own the day with Nucom. And believe me, once you own the day, you can own a whole lot more. Nucom is the only stress management system of its kind, and it's clinically proven in over 1 million sessions to improve your sleep, reduce your stress, and boost your recovery without drugs and side effects. The Nucom system uses cutting-edge neuroscience and consists of 3 non-invasive and non-pharmaceutical items, all of which are included in your monthly subscription that costs less than a daily cup of coffee. You know, I'm working on an event right now. I have a lot of irons in the fire. So stress is, you know, it's happening. This is my busy time of year. I need to be able to work and operate and just live my life at the best possible levels. And Nucom is allowing me to do this. And, you know, when it boils down to the whole process of what Nucom has to offer, it's really easy to use. And you can work it right into your daily routine so that you can achieve better sleep. You can get that stress reduction you're looking for, and you can get the boost in recovery that you want every single day. So do what I did. Own the day with Nucom. Now, we've got a special link set up specifically for listeners of the Productivities Podcast. So go to timecraftingnucom.com and you'll get 50% off your 30-day subscription of Nucom and their money-back guarantee. So again, that's timecrafting, Nucalm.com. And you'll get that 50% discount off a 30-day subscription. And don't forget the money-back guarantee. So again, timecraftingnucom.com. Check it out today. You'll be glad you did. I just mentioned an event that I'm hosting in 2021, something I've been working on for a while. I've not just been working on it. Vanessa, who I mentioned earlier in this break, has also been helping me with it. Last year, last February 29th, we hosted an event called The Big Ready in Vancouver, BC. Well, this year we are taking The Big Ready virtual. The Big Ready 2021 is going to be phenomenal. We have over 20 plus presenters that are going to be appearing at The Big Ready. We've got keynote speakers, we've got actionable workshops, and we've got really engaging panel discussions, plus a lot of other delights along the way. There's so much to take in with The Big Ready that it really, really needs to be read to believe. Now, I'll tell you some of the people that are speaking and presenting at The Big Ready. We've got former podcast guests that are going to be showing up. We've got Chris Bailey, who is the author of Hyperfocus and the author of The Productivity Project. We've got Laura Vanderkam, who's going to be making an appearance. Patrick Roan, Courtney Carver. We've got Anthony Ungaro. We've got workshops being led by Gary Ware and Angela Crocker, Vicky McLeod, Mrithu Parikh. We've got Charlie Gilkey, who's going to be presenting one of the keynotes. There is a vast array of people that will be presenting at the Big Ready. And it's only $99 for this one-day event that's happening on February 2nd. 2021. Now, we do have a VIP option. You can learn about that as well, where you'll get a special workshop with me. We have the Midnight Momentum session that's included with the Big Ready 2021 ticket. And if you buy a ticket to the Big Ready, you will get a recording of it as well, so you won't miss a single session. There's lots to love about what is happening in 2021, and the Big Ready is one of those things. So I encourage you to check it out. Now, there's a link in the show notes, but if you go to thebigready.com, you'll be able to get all the details there and pick up your ticket today. And the first 100 people to buy tickets to the Big Ready 2021 will get physical mail sent to them, like a swag bag, for the first 100 people that sign up. So there's lots of great reasons to join. So don't delay. I want to see you at the Big Ready 2021. It's only $99 a ticket. You'll get the recordings. It's going to be an amazing time, and I'd love for you to be part of it. So go to thebigready.com, pick up your ticket today. And now, let's get back to the show.
Finally, the last piece is purpose. And I don't want to go into too much of what you talk about in the book here, because there's a lot of great stuff in there. And there's some other interesting things I want to get to before we wrap up. But why do you think people don't put purpose at a level that they need to, especially when it comes to, say, their to-do list or their personal productivity? In other words, they're kind of going through the motions as opposed to figuring out what the motions should be in the first place.
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing to say is that we are all guilty of this more times than not. Yep. I know, you know, no human is immune to this, including me and including you. And, you know, I think it at the end of the day, it takes effort and intention, which is ultimately a discipline. So it's not going to happen by chance. And I think that's the first thing to talk about, is that we don't default our way into purpose. We have to choose it, right?
Yep.
And so a lot of times we just, a lot of times as humans, we'll live a life of kind of defaulting, of taking the path of least resistance, and just going with the status quo. And as we know that if we're not growing, we're going to be decaying, because life is all a constant version of change, in a sense. Mm-hmm. There's no stagnancy in that. And so if we're defaulting or settling for the path of least resistance, that's going to be usually going backwards. So this whole idea of attaching to purpose and aligning with it daily is something that takes effort and intention every single day. And if we're not doing that, and again, it gets easier the more we do it. So it's like a muscle, right? It's not right. Saying that it's going to be brutal every single day. There are days where it's going to be hard, but by doing it every day, we get stronger at it, to where it becomes easier. But it still will take effort. And I think the reason why we don't is because life is busy and distracting, and it feels more productive to put a lot of tasks on our to-do list and try to knock them all out than to sit for, you know, I think I believe it was Edison. There's an example of, like, give me the hardest problem to solve and I'll spend 55 minutes of my hour figuring out what the right question is. And then I'll spend the next 5 minutes solving it. And that's all about purpose. Like, what is the goal of this actually? And the point is that we can spend way more time figuring out what the purpose is, and that the tasks after that will become much more clear and defined than if we spend all of our time with busy work and just doing what immediately comes to mind, or what is taking the most of our attention or effort in the moment. It's going to be less productive for us down the road. And it doesn't make sense in the moment. It doesn't always feel right. And that's where we kind of have to preach that truth to ourselves and just trust that by taking 5 minutes or 10 minutes here away from my to-do list and getting clear about what the purpose is, what the goal is, and where I'm heading, that I'm actually going to be more benefited in pursuing that goal just by creating the space to clarify it in the moment.
All right, Thane. As I was going through the book, I'm like, oh, the book is done. And then you have this afterword, which is long. Mm-hmm. And that's not, I'm not necessarily, there's not a condemnation. It was just one of those things where, why so lengthy when it comes to the afterword? And then why did you decide to go down the path of idealism? Because that's what your subject matter is in that afterword. So can you kind of unpack that a little?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. Like, I think that books, my view of books has changed a little bit as I've read more and learned more myself. And I think early on, it was just, I need to read books to finish them because it feels good. And I want to make sure I read everything. But then I've learned, I've turned more into maybe like choose your own adventure. So a book is what it needs to be for you. And it doesn't mean it has to be what the author thought it'd be or what everyone else thought it'd be, but choosing, and I'm still not great at this, but being able to put a book down or being able to read certain parts of it or all those things are, I think, a great practice. And so for this book, you know, there's going to be people that read it and think, you know what, I just don't agree, or I just don't think that's possible, or I just don't think that's helpful, or that's just not me.
Right.
And so there will be critics, there will be people that don't agree, and that's great. Like, I don't think everyone should think like I do. I don't think everyone will, and I know that they won't, because we all have different perspectives on that. But I wanted to create a case for idealism at the end, because it's a case that's not often made. And I think if you err more on the cynicism or skepticism, skepticism is probably a healthier form than cynicism side of the pendulum, then this idea of idealism is going to be kind of repulsive. But I think it's a case that isn't made as often.
Right.
I think that idealism really matters. And the reason why it matters is you need both idealism and skepticism to create some balance among the two polar opposites. And idealism is a lot of what pushes for the change that we see in our world. Without an idealism or idealistic pursuit, there won't be as much progress in our world and society. And a lot of times, the people to bring that about are the people on the younger end of the spectrum, because as we get older, as we live longer, the more we see the suckiness and the hard parts of life and the unfairness and the inequality and injustice that's prevalent throughout all of our world. And it makes us more and more hopeless. It makes us more and more skeptical or pessimistic. And so for the younger generation, our role more often than not is to infuse more idealism to try and balance out the pessimism or skepticism seen within our world. And I think it's a really important task. And I just wanted to put some more words to that to hopefully encourage people that don't agree or don't see the value or purpose of hope in their life as a way to try to speak directly to them.
And the other thing is, and I want to follow up with this with another question, is there is a timeless and philosophical approach that you take in this book. And those kind of ideals, no pun intended, they need to be reiterated. They need to be explored, because I've read Yuval Harari's book, 21 Lessons for a 21st Century, and he talks about the need for more, like, for example, chief philosophical officers at certain companies, because where do the ethics come in? Where do the human parts come in when everything is being either coded or automated? And I think one of the things as you went through it, and like I said, as I got to the end of the four kind of catalysts, and then I saw the afterword, I leaned into that as well. Like, I'm like, this stuff's important. So I can appreciate the fact, as somebody who's written books and you know, has their own methodology and philosophical approach to time management and productivity, that it's not going to be for everybody. But if you can find something for people to think about, that's a big win.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a really important point, because critical thinking is the goal more often than not. Like, we don't want to be fed information. And that's a lot of what happens in our world today with news or social media, is that we're consuming, meaning we're being fed something.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we aren't thinking critically. We're having other people think for us, which is actually hurting us and hindering us more than it's helping us. So how can we start engaging things in a critical way that says, I may not agree with this, but I'm at least read it and see how my perspective can broaden, or see what I can learn, or try to understand maybe this person's perspective so I can better understand my own perspective. And I think too, with that afterward, the important point to just highlight at the end that I think is really helpful is that idealism is different than entitlement. I think entitlement is dangerous in that it's saying that we deserve something that we haven't earned, or that we just deserve it by the inheritable nature of ourself. And idealism is saying that there are ideals to pursue that can be unrealistic, And to do that, I'm going to have to put in work myself, right? I'm going to have to put in the time and effort myself. I'm not going to have it be given to me. And so I think similar with reading, right? We don't want to just read to be given something. We want to read to think better and to see the world better and to have a broader perspective of that. And when we approach books, any book with that lens, we're going to benefit a lot more, because then we start having these mental models or frameworks we start forming in our own heads that help us engage with the entire world and any information or conversation we have in a more helpful or healthy way. And I think that's such an important part of being a good human. And we can all grow in that daily for sure.
Thane, before I let you go, I want to ask you one last question. It's a variation of what I ask pretty much every guest and have for quite some time is, what's one thing, one simple action that someone can take starting today, as soon as they stop listening to this, to start to bring the catalysts of hope, for hope rather, into their life?
Yeah, I think the simplest, easiest action, you kind of referred to it earlier with meditation, is just to pause. Pausing is one of those things that for people that are listening to the show, they want to be productive, they want to keep moving, they're kind of achievers, and I'm very much that way. But in order to move forward better, we have to pause and reflect and realign and reattach. So in order to be filled with hope and to be generators of hope in this world, we have to pause so that we can reattach and realign to that purpose and to that hope, so we can be filled with it and fill others with it as we move forward.
Thane, this has been a fantastic conversation. I know we could talk a lot longer about more of what you've got in this book, Catalyst for Hope, Unlocking Energy, Optimism, and Your Full Potential, but we can't. So what I want people to do is be able to find you and keep up with your work. So where can they do that?
ThaneMarcus.com is kind of the headquarters for all that I do, and would love for people to connect there. Check out some of the blog posts or books or podcasts or courses, you name it. So it'd be great to hear from you and connect.
Thanks so much for joining me on the Productivityist podcast today.
Thanks for having me, Mike. This is a blast.